Hi, this is Jim.
And this is Max.
Check out our podcast, The Step Over, Liberty Ballers Podcast Network, for all of your Sixers needs.
Player analysis, game breakdowns, who would look coolest in a headband, and more.
Subscribe to Liberty Ballers Podcast feed on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts, and check out The Step Over, a podcast about Sixers basketball.
Mostly.
Batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 246. I'm John Stolness from SB Nation's Phillies blog, The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter, at John Stolness. Coming up, we got more hot stove stuff to get into, but we're going to do some stuff that doesn't have anything to do with the hot stove, really. Kind of looking forward ahead to 2019, just to kind of get off the Macharper stuff and all that for just a little while, because, frankly, we're all kind of sick and tired of talking about something that hasn't happened yet, but we'll give you the latest update on the news and rumors and information that's out there right now. And joining me, as they do every Sunday night to talk some Phil's baseball, is Justin Clue from The Good Fight and Liz Rocher from Yahoo Sports. You can follow Justin on Twitter at Justin_Clue. Follow Liz on Twitter at Liz Rocher. Justin, how are you, my man? How you feeling, buddy?
John, I saw the movie Vice today, and I am pleased to report that it features an on-screen cameo of Phillies backup catcher from the past, Brian Schneider, when Dick Cheney goes to throw out a baseball at a Washington Nationals game and is raucously booed. So that satisfies your curiosity, the curiosity of our listeners. And I forgot to say spoiler alert, so I'm sorry for everyone, because yes, as you might have guessed, Brian Schneider appearing in the movie is a focal point and deeply affects the movie's third act.
I would think so. Brian Schneider affected many moments in my life, so it only stands to pass that he would be playing such an integral role.
I mean, we know that he would say that American history kind of hinged on Brian Schneider's appearance at that point in time, frankly.
Well, we all know Schneider's pitch framing was not top notch, so I would imagine he probably cost Cheney a strike, and that, you know, that could have led to some of the boos, I think. I mean, why else would you boo Dick Cheney at that particular time?
Well, I'm not going to, you know, to specify which atrocity, but the frustration of his inability to correctly catch the ball thrown by Dick Cheney led to some global cataclysm that we are still recovering from. So we have Brian Schneider to thank for that.
Thanks, Brian. And Liz, how you feeling? How are things going with you?
Things are going well. I actually just watched Christian Bale win a Golden Globe for portraying Dick Cheney in Vice, a movie I have not seen. I have not seen the movie, but he just won an award for it. Golden Globes are on tonight. I am sacrificing. I am sacrificing keeping track of me kicking the asses of everyone in my family in our awards pool. I'm sacrificing, flaunting my victory over them every single award to talk to all of you about the Phillies. This is how much I love you.
To talk about the Phillies who aren't even making news right now, which is...
They're not getting a Golden Globe. There's no reason I should care.
No. But I mean, I've never done one of those Golden Globe or Oscar pools or anything like that. Just because I don't get to see a lot of movies or TV right now. It's kind of one of those things where if I'm not helping to take care of the kids and I'm not at work, I'm doing this. And so I'm not really able to get out to the movie theater. I think I've seen like two movies in the movie theater in the last 3 years or whatever. So the Golden Globes are kind of lost on me, guys. But, you know,
I like to look at all the dresses.
Me too.
And all the really, really good looking people. This is it's just a giant room full of good looking people, you know, dressing up on camera for you for like 3 hours. I enjoy
this
it.
This podcast is three different rooms with one good looking person in each of them. So I would say this is pretty
there
close to the same experience, just not visually.
It's very much like the Golden Globes. Yeah, no, this podcast has been, it's been called the Golden Globes of Philly's podcasts. I think I've seen that in the reviews at one time. And if it hasn't, folks, you could write that in the reviews if you wanted to. Go to Apple Podcasts.
I don't, because that does not make sense.
Not at all. Not at all. But you could say a nice word or two about the podcast. If you leave a rating and a review in Apple Podcasts, if you wouldn't mind, that would be fantastic. And I know a lot of you guys are hyped up on the Eagles playoff win over the Bears. I still cannot believe Cody Parkey missed the field goal. Although it was tipped. Trayvon Hester tipped it ever so slightly, but it did affect the trajectory of the ball and bounced off the uprights. And, you know, it's kind of funny. I mentioned this last week when the Bears beat the Vikings to open the door for the Eagles to get into the playoffs. And I was thinking to myself, I was reminded of 2011 when on the last day of the season, the Phillies beat the Braves in a game the Phillies didn't need, but they kept, you know, the game went like 14 innings or something like that, and eventually beat the Braves, which opened the door for the St. Louis Cardinals to get into the playoffs. And then in the first round of the playoffs, the Cardinals beat the Phillies. And I was trying to warn Chicago Bears fans, the very same thing could happen because sports sometimes really sucks. And darned if it didn't happen tonight in the most heartbreaking way possible. Each of these games, by the way, game 5 of the NLDS that year and tonight's game against between the Eagles and the Bears decided by 1 point. So how about that? By the way, how did the Cardinals do that year?
I don't know. I stopped watching baseball after that, actually. I finished.
Any Eagles fans listening, they won the whole damn thing. So anyway, I just thought that was...
I have no memory of any of that.
I'm going to be the Larry Schenck of this podcast, the resident historian, the podcast historian, to kind of remember the moments that everyone else wants to hate and forget. Justin, as the host of the
Hello.
Dirty Inning, these should be moments. The award winning the Dirty Inning, these should be moments that not only you don't forget, but that you embrace and structure content around.
Something else to consider, John. Both teams wore hats. So,
they
Eagles,
did.
Cardinals.
They did.
Human beings only have capacity for so much pain, John. What do you want from us?
I guess that's true. But anyway, I just thought that was an interesting little piece of synergy here. So anyway, let's get on to the latest information that we have on Mitch Harper. And I'm not going to call it news because we don't have any news on Bryce Harper or Manny Machado. But we have some information that's been coming down the pike over the weekend. New York Daily News piece this weekend wrote that there is no credible evidence that I used Mitch Harper. He didn't write Mitch Harper in his story. I will give cash money to anyone who writes Mitch Harper in an actual news story about these two, but I need credit for it. They've been offered no credible evidence. They've been offered 10 years by anyone. The piece by what's the guy's first name? Last name is Madden.
Bill.
Writes for the New York Daily News. Do you guys? Bill Madden. Thank you. Bill Madden writes, it looks more and more likely that neither will approach the 10 years and $300 million people said they would get. Now, we've heard that the Nationals are said to have increased their initial 10 years, $300 million offer. So I'm not exactly sure where Madden's getting this. He's saying the Nationals now said to be big on Harper. I think there's no doubt that's being pushed by Scott Boras. He reports the White Sox offer to Machado was in the 7-200 neighborhood. But here was the most interesting part of this piece that I saw, guys, and one of the two most interesting parts of this piece that I thought was interesting. He wrote, quote, there is said to be a new line of thinking in Philly high command, whatever the hell, Philly high, with an eye on Mike Trout becoming a free agent in 2 years, and that it's best not to tie up too much money and years in Mitch Harper. I mean,
so this is like this isn't just a board columnist saying, "Hey, consider
seriously.
This." This guy is saying that the Phillies actually think this now, which is the
yes.
more troublesome part.
yes, this isn't Bill Madden speculating. He's saying that he believes he's got some inside information, or that he's hearing from executives that the Phillies are hedging on a 10-year deal for Machado or Harper because they want to make sure they have room for Mike Trout, which. Unless you're signing Harper or Trout to a 1 or 2 year deal, what's the difference between 7 years and 10 years? You know what I mean? It's coming in 3 years anyway. A Trout free agency after the next two seasons.
Maybe.
I'm not understanding the logic.
Yeah,
there.
I mean, this is first of all, I want to thank that article for the giant big ass. Low res image of Manny Machado that was in the middle of the article for no reason, and you had to scroll past for a long time. But this is like barbershop family cookout talk. The last person I had a conversation with in real life about you know, I think we should wait for Mike Trout. It was my uncle at a wedding when we were playing cornhole. And that's really the extent to where this conversation should end at the moment. If you want to live in a world, if we lived in a world where like we could just punt on two of the greatest free agents we may ever have access to and wait for another one who was guaranteed to be available and come here, then like, okay, yeah, that's not even a plan. That's just like, oh, that's, we'll do that. That's what's going to happen. But obviously the lack of absolutes is what makes this so silly. And we've repeated that time and time again. Nobody wants to wait and see if he becomes available. I mean, if you do, that's just a hell of a gamble. And I hope they have a better reason for thinking that he would lean towards Philadelphia than this hometown crap, which again, in this article, he brought up, oh, he's from Millville, New Jersey, which I'm really just finding the dumbest repeated refrain when it comes to this kind of conversation. I don't think he's never said anything other than about this, like about saying like, oh, I was a Phillies fan growing up, so that's a team I really want to rejoin. They're all just workplaces to him at this point. Plus, that's a couple more years of, if you're talking about adding Trout to a team and then expecting that team to be a competitive team, if it's all about planning around this Mike Trout hole that you're waiting for him to fill, assuming like, let's assume that he's definitely coming at that point and that plan makes sense. That's still a couple of years of wasting, you know, letting other young talent that's supposed to surround him and supplement his skills just sort of waste away waiting for this savior to come from the West and just rise like a phoenix and then come over to buy a house in Millville and commute to the ballpark every day like everyone imagines. I mean, that's these other players have to be good for something. If it's all about waiting for Trout, then, you know, that's a little too far down the road, I think, and especially with two of these great free agents right in front of us. I mean, it's this, this is what we keep talking about.
Yeah. And Liz, we've talked about this before. Waiting for Trout is a stupid strategy. I've called it hope as a tactic. It's absolutely what it is. You can't, I mean, the fans are not going to, they're not going to take that as an excuse for not being aggressive on getting one of these guys. I mean, I think we've all agreed if they go aggressive on Machado or Harper and they sign someplace else, okay, there's nothing you can do about that. But if you're going to go, if the Phillies really are hedging on a 10-year deal for these guys because they want to leave open the possibility of signing Mike Trout if and when he becomes a free agent, it's lunacy, is it not?
What evidence do we have that this dude knows anything? Is my question.
Yeah,
like, that's kind
a good
of
point.
My thing. Like, this front office is locked up tight. The beat writers have had nothing to say. I don't know where this dude gets off saying this other than, you know, he knows someone. Like, sure, every beat writer does it. Every reporter has to say things, you know, to write stuff. But, like, there's no evidence that this is true other than things continuing to not happen and all of us continuing to shout into the void for something to happen. Because the longer it doesn't happen, the more we think, oh, everything is terrible. They're obviously doing something wrong. We just have no evidence of that. And this dude presents nothing. Not even, like, you know, a high, you know, an executive high up or whatever it is. It's, you know, thinking in the front office has changed.
See, that's the thing with all of these different guys. And a lot of these guys are the New York writers. We have to just, we're all working under the assumption that they're plugged in. And we don't know how, we don't know to whom, but that they're just plugged in and that they're not pulling this information out of their rear ends, that they are actually hearing this from people. But we don't know who these people are. We don't know how reputable these people are. And that's the thing that's frustrating for us on the outside, is we're relying on the word of some of these writers who are out-of-towners, who are not, like you said, the Phillies beat writers. It'd be one thing if Jim Salisbury writes this. Jim Salisbury writes something like this, I believe it. If Matt Breen writes something about this, or if Megan Montemuro writes something about this, I'm more likely to believe it by a lot. But that's the thing. I don't know. I mean, Bill Madden has been a columnist for a long time in New York. I have no doubt that he has some connections. But, you know, this whole thing about waiting for Trout, we're just assuming that he's in the know. And we can't know that for sure, which is certainly makes people suspicious of a piece like this. And I will say that the only part I really find believable is that I am wondering whether or not the Phillies actually have offered 10 years to either of these guys. Or, you know, something around 10 years, $350 million. My thinking is that if the Phillies had actually offered a 10-year, $350, $370 million contract to Machado or Harper, my guess is, especially for Machado, since he seems to be closer to making a decision, he would have taken it. I don't know that they have made that kind of an offer, because if they have, then what is Machado waiting for New York to step up and make a similar offer like that? It's clear they're not going to do that. So, Justin, I don't understand. I mean, I think that's one part of this that I can kind of believe.
What, that New York isn't going to come through because...
Well, no, that the Phillies haven't offered anything like 10 years, $350 million yet. Because I really believe if they had already done that, that he probably would have signed already. Machado,
sure.
I'm talking
I mean,
about first year.
Where else does he have to turn at this point? If the White Sox are rumored to have made their offer and it wasn't 10 years, and the Yankees, we've seen since the Tulowitzki deal, again, word is, they're less and less inclined to make him the kind of deal that the Phillies are prepared to make. So where else is he going to go to get a deal like that? So it does make you wonder, yeah, what's the holdup? Maybe, you know, it's like everyone was saying, he just doesn't want to come to Philadelphia. Maybe he wants to come to Philadelphia so little that he's willing to not take the deal that he's dreamed of for his entire career. No, it's of course ridiculous. The only answer must be that they haven't made the offer yet because they're still.
I don't think that's the only answer. I'm sorry to interrupt, but like we just have no idea. We have no idea. Who knows what the holdup is? He could continuing to be discussed where he wants to spend next, depending on the contracts that he's been offered, when the opt outs are, the next 5 to 7 to 8 years of his life. Where he wants to do that, like the fact that we expect him to just be like, oh, this is the most money decision made. What am I waiting for? I think that's kind of a false narrative. I really don't think it's that simple for him or for anyone, because he could be looking at, you know, an offer that's fine from the Yankees where he really wants to play, and an offer that's a lot of money from the Phillies where, you know, it may not be his first choice. And so that's a tough
decision. Sure, but if
decision.
We're talking about...
That's not an easy decision to make.
It doesn't need to be said that it's not an easy decision to make. We've said over and over again how crazy it must be to be looking at a piece of paper that determines where you could be spending the next 5 to 10 years of your life. That's goes without saying.
Well, then I hate this whole
what we know.
We don't know what he's waiting for. We all just want him to make a decision because we want him to make a decision. Like, you know, it sucks that we all have to wait, but... He's earned it. And yeah, I don't necessarily think him not making a decision means that the Phillies or anyone have offered less or more than numbers that people have floated. No one knows
but
anything
it could mean
for
that.
Sure.
I mean, we could answer every question on this podcast with nobody knows for sure. But we're talking about a guy who said...
Well, yeah, I mean, it could mean that. But I kind of hate the, you know, well, it obviously means that, you know, that they haven't made this deal. I at least want the acknowledgement that it could be something else, and that it doesn't necessarily mean that no one has offered, you know, the giant amount of money.
I didn't consider that answer until John mentioned that it was the case, and it occurred to me that, yeah, you know, that's a decent argument to present. He said, you know, it'll be the new year when I make my decision. There were three teams that we considered to be the front runners for signing him. The White Sox, nobody's considered a very prominent entry into the fray. The Yankees, we've seen with the Tulowitzki narrative kind of like leaning away from the deal he seemed to be getting. So with the Phillies, the last team left standing with their offer, it would make sense. Maybe they didn't give him the offer yet that he wants to see because he hadn't made the deal yet. I think the evidence is there, but we're looking at it from very far away. So yeah, I'm not saying this because I have inside information, just presenting it that from what we know from our little viewpoint, yeah, this far away from wherever, you know, the bunker that Manny Machado is conducting his operations this offseason, that's a possibility, a remote one, but it's one of many.
I'm just looking at it logically, and I know that if I were in Manny Machado's shoes, I would certainly be looking at other aspects, like you said, Liz, because you're right, it's more than just about the years and the money. But my thinking is that if the Phillies are going to sign him, they're going to have to overpay him much more than anybody else. And if the Yankees are throwing around numbers like 7-200, and the White Sox are throwing around numbers like 7-200, and the Phillies are throwing around 7-230 or 7-240 or something like that, you know, that's certainly not what he's looking for. And that's probably not enough to push him to Philadelphia, but he also doesn't want to take a lesser deal. So, I mean, you're right. I don't know that for a fact. I'm just kind of looking at this logically and thinking to myself, if if he was getting offered the type of contract that everybody said that he wanted at the start of the season, that he would have signed already. But again, I'm making an assumption, and that's totally valid. And he might be considering a whole host of other factors moving into this. And you know, none of us know. I'm just, you know, it's hard to know which of these stories, what to take out of them, that's actually something that you can rely on as sturdy enough to make an argument as to why this is dragging on. Because everything you're does this not feel like it's dragging on? I mean, I thought that one or both of these guys would have signed by now.
Yeah, I think a lot of people did. Yeah. Go ahead, Liz.
I don't know, with the way the market has moved, I didn't expect them to sign until late. I thought one of them might sign by Christmas, but I pretty much thought that we'd be waiting till February for the other.
Well, let's move on to another piece in the Bill Madden story, because this has to also do with Mike Trout. And this is something that he mentioned in his piece, that talking about Trout and his desire to be to play on the East Coast, and said Trout's former manager Mike Socia said in an interview with the Philadelphia Inquirer, that Mike Socia's comment quote was, "Mike's an East Coast guy and he's going to take his time to make a decision." And then talking about Mike Trout. So Mike Socia seems to think that Trout wants to play on the East Coast, calling him an East Coast guy. Again, Socia was his manager for a number of years, so maybe he has some indication, some idea there what the guy wants. But Socia also said he'd like to manage again to Bill Madden. And Bill Madden mentions a Trout-Socia reunion in Philly in 2021. I wouldn't bet against it. I mean,
what does that mean?
Out of his ass. Out
what is he?
I wouldn't
his
bet
ass.
Against it. Like, who's betting him in scenario?
Think about how much money the Phillies have dumped into analytics. How much money? Forget about Matt Klintak, because Matt Klintak might not be here in 2021. Maybe he will be. Maybe he won't be. But whatever general manager is here, they're going to be an analytically driven general manager just because of the money and the time and the resources this team has dumped into analytics. And there, Liz, there is no less of an analytics manager in baseball than Mike Socia. And at this point, I'm not sure this is an old dog who'll learn new tricks. So imagining him as the manager of this team, I find a tad far-fetched.
It's over for Mike Socia. He served out the end of his contract with the Angels. They gave him that long contract. You know, they loved him out there for a long time. They chose him over the GM at one point.
Right.
And you know, and a lot of that was about loyalty. The time for managers like Mike Socia, I think, are mostly over. Like, if there's a flailing team that needs someone, they'll grab him. Like, the Tigers hired Ron Gardenhier, which is, I think, kind of great. It's perfect. They need it. Like, it's the Phillies bringing on Pete McCannon. Mike Socia at this point would be a good guy to steady a ship while, you know, a team figures itself out.
Yeah.
You know, he would be good to manage like the Mariners if they didn't already have Scott Servais who is that? Is that, am I right? I think that's him. I just can't even imagine him coming here or managing another team of young up and coming players. It's not the trend in managing right now. It's younger guys. It's why I think Joe Madden is going to have a hard time finding another managerial job. I think someone will jump on it, but I think it'll take a while because I don't know if there's a team that's looking for that. They want young guys.
No, I agree. And Justin, that's the way we're seeing it. And, you know, so Associate Trout reunion in 2021 in Philadelphia. It's just mind-bogglingly stupid.
I would bet against that, Bill Madden. I would bet against that. I would bet Bill Madden that wouldn't happen. That would just.
And by the way, how long is Mike Socia, Justin, going to live off that 2003 World Series? Like, seriously, that how long ago? It was 16 years ago. Fifteen years ago, if you're the 15 World Series ago.
Hey, the sparkle of that ring gets in your eye, and you forget everything. You forget about the passage of time. You forget about your family and friends, and it's all you can think about. So, yeah, I mean, look, it's not like he's it's not like he's it's like a hateable guy or anything. It just would indicate a reversal philosophy, I guess, that the Phillies have taken a long time investing. I mean, look at the minor league hitting coordinator they just hired, who I believe was with the Dodgers at the same time as Gabe Kapler, who is very, very data driven, comes from a company that does a lot of analytics, and he's going to be working with the Phillies minor league hitters. And that's just like one example of the ways this mindset has, I keep almost using the word infected. That's got a negative connotation. I don't mean to do that, but it is sort of like the, oh, this is less negative. Sort of like when Hydra took over Shield, figuratively over the course of several decades. Again, not to put it negatively, but there's every level of this organization where this mindset is a more modern lean into the version of baseball we now have. It's sort of taking over the organization. And Mike Scioscia, you know, he doesn't really represent that. So that would be a strange move for the Phillies to make a couple of years down the line when they're presumably watching the fruits of these labors, hopefully, blossom.
What was the general manager that got canned? Was it Billy Epler that got canned, or was that the replacement? I'm trying to remember who it was. But there was the problem was Mike Scioscia was getting these analytic reports from these guys in the organization and refusing to pass it along to his players.
Nice.
I mean, that's just you're not going to get another job in this day and age doing that. So I mean, unless Mike Scioscia says I can bring you Mike Trout, I mean, I don't see him getting a job anywhere from this point on.
Be a good fanatic.
Yeah, he probably would be a good fanatic. He could go over the Nationals and do the president races, you know, maybe climb into the Teddy Roosevelt mask or whatever.
I was gonna say he had a Galapagos game, but no, that's mean. He is a you know, experienced baseball person and a grown ass man. So
yeah, I guess that's true. Let me have my moment. All right, well, let's thank you to Bill Madden for writing a piece that was that had so much inanity in it that it allowed us to take up about 20 minutes on the podcast here. I know you guys talked about the David Robertson signing on continued success, and a good job you did of it as well. Just a couple other quick things to touch on with the Robertson signing. It's kind of interesting. How do you guys think he's going to be used? Because I think everything we're hearing about it is that he's not going to be the quote-unquote closer, and that this team probably isn't going to use a closer per se, a ninth inning guy per se. Liz, I know we had talked about in the past about how modern bullpens shouldn't really have a guy whose job is the ninth inning. And no matter who's coming up to the plate, that's the ninth inning guy. That sometimes your closer needs to be brought in the eighth inning or something like that. But I think we saw last year not having an experienced ninth inning guy, somebody who knows how to get those last three outs, which I do think are harder to get than the three outs you get in the eighth inning. Having a guy who knows how to do that is invaluable. And David Robertson has three seasons with 30 or more saves recently. So I guess if there was a one run lead late in a game the Phillies had to have, who would you want in the game? Sir Anthony Dominguez or David Robertson?
I'd send David Robertson in immediately.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's experienced. He knows what he's doing. And I think I give Gabe Kapler some time. If he's got someone who's reliable, he'll send him out there. Because we saw him do that a lot this season. Because there have been times when he found a lineup he liked and he would just get comfortable with it and send guys out every day. You know, when Sir Anthony Dominguez would do well or do badly 2 days in a row, he'd get another chance. Like, as soon as Robertson proves himself, he'll be the go-to guy. I think that's Kapler's crutch, is because he really is, I think, searching for consistency somewhere, something that he can have as a tent pole and you can build up and out from that. Whether he says he wants it or not, I feel like he's searching for it, because you can see it in his lineups and his in-game decisions all throughout last year. So, you know, he might just be what he needs to sort of ground himself in whatever it is he's doing.
And Justin, I think the Robertson signing, along with the other moves that they've made this this offseason, trading for Gene Segura and signing Andrew McCutchen over somebody who had a little bit more of an injury history like Michael Brantley or AJ Pollock, shows this team is looking for, they're really valuing and paying money for guys who have proven to stay healthy and consistent. And that is, I think that's something we see with David Robertson. He's been the most consistent relief pitcher in baseball over the last decade or so. He never gets hurt, and he's always right about the same, isn't he?
Hey, if there are worse through lines to notice as far as all the signings your team is making over the course of an offseason, and I mean, that's a good one. You know, it makes a lot of sense. It's like, let's get good players who don't get hurt. Hey, that's a novel concept. You don't even have to credit that to analytics. That's just people who like alive baseball players. I think that's a good place to focus. And it does give him an advantage over a lot of the other guys that were linked to the Phillies as far as filling this role. And the more we learned about Andrew Miller's and Zach Britton's out there on the market, as they were each rumored to be in the Phillies' sights, the more it was like, yeah, this is this is a guy who's looking to bounce back. A guy like Britton, who was coming back this past year and didn't really get all the way back, and probably will never get all the way back to the version of Zach Britton shut down the American League for three seasons. So I think Robertson signing here for, you know, hey, I know we don't care about the money. I mean that genuinely, but he really didn't sign for as much as I thought he was going to get, or what a lot of people thought he wasn't going to get. And it's a reasonable deal with a guy who doesn't miss a lot of time. I think you could do a lot worse. So again, I think the Phillies have yet to make a real misstep this offseason.
Yeah, these moves, Liz, that they're making would just be the perfect complements to getting Machado or Harper. But, you know, without Machado or Harper, it does kind of feel incomplete at the moment. But when you're looking at Robertson and the two-year, $23 million contract he signed, he probably forwent, I don't know what the right way to say that is, but he probably cost himself a year and some money by negotiating the contract himself, is acting as his own agent. When you look at what Jeurys Familia got, 3 years, $30 million from the Mets. Andrew Miller got $25 million over 2 years. He got $2 million more than David Robertson. Plus, they had to give Andrew Miller a no-trade clause in that deal. Zach Britton gets $39 million for 3 years, although Britton's deal has some interesting contractual wriggles that we'll get into more here in a little bit when we talk about a couple of our favorite characters of the offseason subplots. So we'll get to that in just a second. But then you had Joe. This was the one I noticed. Joe Kelly got 3 years, $25 million. And David Robertson gets 2 years and $23 million. Liz, that to me just, this is the bargain relief pitching signing of the offseason so far. And he's good. That's the other thing. A bargain doesn't mean anything if a guy's not good.
That's true. I mean, I've seen it said that, and I talked about this on the podcast, I've seen it said that he cost himself some money, or at least a year, because I think, you know, per year he's getting pretty much the same as everyone else. But he's the same age as Andrew Miller. He's 33. The guys who've gotten, you know, guaranteed three-year deals are all younger. They're all around 30. They're all around, you know, 29, 30. Yeah. Jeurys Familia is 29. I think that him being older definitely played a role, more than him representing himself, because if
fair point,
you know, I think if it really was more of a quote bargain, it would be less money per year, but he's getting the same as everyone else. He has that option for the third year with the team. You know, Andrew Miller's is performance based. If he misses some time, he's out of luck, you know.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so I think that's what it is. He has that no trade clause, but he made the trade off. You know, because now he has to stay healthy, which he hasn't been able to do over the past season. So it's a fair estimate that, you know, the team wouldn't have done that if they didn't think, well, there is a chance he might miss it.
Yeah. No, and then the good news for the Phillies is it doesn't really matter the years or the money right now. They have what looks to be a pretty good bullpen for 2019. You get him in there with Sir Anthony, and if you get good Hector Neris is a very effective late inning relief pitcher. If you're getting the Hector Neris that isn't tipping his pitches and isn't serving up monster bombs with two outs in the bottom of the ninth, it'll still be interesting to see whether or not the Phillies move Pat Neshek or Tommy Hunter. It sounds like they want to move at least one of those guys, but you also, even if you get rid of those guys, you still have Juan Nicasio, you still have Victor Arano, you still have Edubre Ramos, young guys who have great stuff, who have the ability to potentially get better in 2019. And so I think the bullpen's looking pretty good right now. We said that going into last season too, and so you never know with a bullpen. Bullpens, as we've said, as you guys have said on this podcast over and over again, are up and down from year to year, so we'll just kind of have to see how it works out. But knowing how volatile bullpens are and how volatile relievers are, the fact you get Robertson on this kind of a deal, the most consistent late-inning relief pitcher in baseball over the last decade, I think that's brilliant. That's a great move by Matt Klentak. Let's get away from the hot stove a little bit, guys, because I think everybody's ODing on the hot stove, especially since there's really no news or anything going on right now. Folks, as we were kind of chatting this weekend, getting ready for the podcast, thinking of some different things to talk about, Justin came up with this interesting idea, and I think this is everybody's got their favorite here. It'd be interesting. I'm curious to hear what your guys's are, but who has been your favorite character of the offseason so far? There's a lot of subplots in baseball right now, and I think we had five candidates for this. Yusei Kikuchi, the Japanese pitcher who just signed with the Seattle Mariners. Agent Scott Boras, who came up with the term swell pot this weekend, gang, talking about Zach Britton's unique contract.
Is that it? It was swell pot?
Swell
no, it was
pot.
Swell opt. OPT.
Oh, swell opt. Oh, thank God.
Oh, was
swell
it really? I totally option. Misread that. Oh, my gosh. It wasn't swell pot? Really?
No, the swell pot is something else.
Well, no, there's another thing that, yeah, but I know that, but I thought Scott Boras was making a play on words, but I don't know. Okay.
He is. It's option.
It's a very, very poor play on words. It's not his best work.
No, not his best work, but Scott Boras has been an interesting figure this offseason. Randy Miller, who's a writer who just put out one of the worst Hall of Fame ballots you're ever going to see, and we'll talk about Randy Miller, and we can just kind of group it into all of the baseball writers who are putting out some of the worst Hall of Fame ballots out there. Gabe Kapler, for what he's doing with the wildfire fundraising. Remember, Gabe, of course, lost his home in the California wildfires a couple months back, and so he's been doing a lot of work to try and raise awareness and raise money for victims of the wildfires. And then Mets GM Brody Van Wagenen, who has turned the Mets into one of the more interesting teams this offseason. Justin, you asked a question, so go ahead. Let me start with you. Who's your favorite character of the offseason so far?
Well, I got to say that those are not just nominations, but also just a few suggestions. This floor is open to any and all, any and all of these narrative threads. One you didn't mention for me is Harold Baines making the Hall of Fame. That's been one of my absolute favorite stories because I hate the Hall of Fame. And I love the way that he managed to get in because a bunch of his friends were like, yeah, this guy, we like this guy. And, you know, he's good enough and let's get him in there. And they did. And he's like, cool. And that really pissed off a lot of purists. So I celebrate that occurring. I love this offseason. I really loved what Scott Boras has done. Holding the meeting next to a giant Christmas tree and just using the phrase Harper's Bazaar when it comes to Bryce Harper. The invention of that term, the pronunciation of which we can debate later off mic, and the way that it might affect future contracts. Honestly, just reading about that was like, oh, that's interesting. It kind of makes sense. It, the argument could be made, it benefits the player and it benefits the team and it creates, less of an environment where somebody's going to feel like they've been taken advantage of. So that is cool. But I got to say, I keep coming back to Brody Van Wagenen because I've talked about how much I've enjoyed watching him work this offseason. And just as an objective baseball fan that just sort of like, he just gives off this vibe that everything that he does, he finishes by like adjusting his tie and looking in the mirror and going, still got it. I think he uses a lot of finger guns. I think he has like pairs of sunglasses installed in strategic locations, like from the glove compartment of his car to like a potted plant in a room he might walk into just in case he needs to make a cool exit. So I'm all about what Brody Van Wagenen's doing because I don't dislike Matt Klentak at all, but he's kind of the anti Matt Klentak. And once I realized that, I just like the idea of the two of them being roommates and him like antagonizing Klentak and just being like, what are you doing? And Matt Klentak being like, get out of here. No, it's just my room. It's private. So I'm really into the dynamic that I've both fictional and nonfiction that he's managed to create in the NL East and this offseason.
Liz, how about you? Favorite character of the offseason or favorite characters of the offseason so far?
I am loath to give a shit about the Hall of Fame, but the bad ballots have been, you know, I'll say it again next year, and I probably said it last year, are offensively bad, and the people who submit them are offensively bad. There's the guy, I think there's the guy who didn't vote for Mariano Rivera and had a stupid reason for it. He compared him to Adam Vinatieri, I think, like kickers or some ridiculous bullshit. There's Randy Miller being racist and having it removed from the Post, presumably by a panicked editor who couldn't believe that he was also so bad at his job that he let it go by. There's everyone, every single person who's voted for Curt Schilling, which is a lot.
The guy, I don't think that's Evan Grant. Like, I don't think he's a bad guy, but his ballot was, he voted for Michael Young because he was a Rangers beat writer, and he cited like his great character and blah, blah, blah. I was like, hey man, whatever. Like, it sucks that there's like 10, probably 10 guys worthy of a vote, and Michael Young isn't a Hall of Fame player, but like giving him that nod, like, I don't think that sucks, but like, I get why people would argue with that. But citing his character and then voting for Curt Schilling,
yeah, right, come on, man.
Like, everyone who's voted for Curt Schilling, like, John Heyman was a dude. John Heyman didn't vote for him 1 year and said, I'm doing this because of this. And then the next year went right back to it like it was no big deal. He might have said something about it on Twitter. It's bullshit. Everyone who's voted for Curt Schilling, I don't get it. The dude is a literal Nazi. It bothers me so much. I really don't want to be bothered by it, but he's going to get to give a Hall of Fame speech this year because I think he's got enough support to get in.
Wow. Wonder what.
And we'll all have to listen to it. He's going to be in the Hall of Fame, and he's going to get a platform to say things, and everyone's going to be paying attention to him, which is just shameful. The writers do not, none of the writers, not even the ones that submit good ballots, the only ones who don't have, the only ones who could say anything are the ones who choose not to vote. But they have no leg to stand on complaining about Harold Baines. They have nothing. You know, I don't necessarily think Harold Baines should be in the Hall of Fame either, but I also don't think Curt Schilling should be in there for other reasons. So, you know, which one is better than the other? Harold Baines isn't a Nazi. I'd rather Harold Baines be in. And so the writers can stuff it.
I really look forward to seeing which of his favorite topics Curt Schilling talks about during his speech. I have a feeling he's going to stray from baseball.
Do you think it's
that guy?
No, I know. And I think, you know, Justin and I once had an argument in written form about the efficacy of putting Curt Schilling in the Hall of Fame. And I've come to the other side of that. I know that
a lot's happened since then, honestly.
A lot's happened in the character class. And, you know, and I've just thought more about it. You know, my thinking has evolved about it quite a bit.
Ever since John and I had a full on throwdown in an alley strewn with broken glass behind a really shady bar. Yeah.
Yeah. I got cut up good. Yeah. I got cut up good. Yeah. It was not pretty.
You trapped me in the dumpster. That sucked.
It was ugly. For me, the guy is Scott Boras because you know, to a lesser extent, Machado's agent Lozano. But these two guys are basically holding the baseball world hostage right now with Machado and Harper. And, you know, Boras does this every year. It's just he is a magician. I have no doubt that in some way, somehow, Scott Boras had some kind of influence in the Bill Madden piece. And he has influence, I think, every time you see a writer tweet something about how some team isn't going to offer this, or, you know, some team is now the favorite in this, you know, leading for Harper, or the favorite for this player. It's all it's the agents working the media, working things through. In many cases, not all cases, but in many cases, it's the agents like Scott Boras who does this every year. He does this every year with guys, and he always gets his guys the money that he's looking for. It's amazing. He's the best ever at this. He has made his baseball clients so much money over the course of his career that I think Scott Boras should be in the Hall of Fame someday. You talk about some of the guys, like, you know, who don't deserve to get in, the different character clause guys. No, the Baseball Hall of Fame isn't just reserved necessarily for players. And if you look at how much Scott Boras has made for his players, and yeah, for himself as well, you can make the argument that he has had such a profound impact in the game with the record contracts in baseball history that he has been responsible for. that he could be inducted into Cooperstown in some fashion, in some form, however that would take place. I know there's calls for Marvin Miller to be inducted into the Hall of Fame for his contributions to the to baseball, and I think that's totally valid too. I think he should be in the Hall of Fame as well. But then a guy like Scott Boras, I think, is an advocate for the players who has gotten his players such an unbelievable amount of money over the years. I think Scott Boras should be in the Hall of Fame. What do you guys think?
I'd be down with that.
Me too. It's never going to happen.
No, it's never going to happen.
But yeah, I mean, I would definitely be for it, you know, in the same way that Marvin Miller should be in the Hall of Fame and isn't. And yeah, it's going to take, I mean, that's
it's
shameful.
A joke that Marvin Miller's not in the Hall of Fame. Whether you like him or not, the contribution he's made to the game, you have to acknowledge.
Well, exactly. And this is how I look at the Hall of Fame. Would the Hall of Fame be more or less, be more complete with this person, or would it not matter? Would the Hall of Fame be more complete with Curt Schilling? No, it wouldn't matter. But without Marvin Miller, the Hall of Fame is missing a major part of its history. Hall of Fame ain't missing nothing with the friggin' bloody sock moron.
Honestly, you know, they've got Eric Bruntlett's glove from when he had the unassisted triple play in there. You don't have to induct somebody in to honor them. They could just have Scott Boras's most worn fleece in the most press conferences in there behind glass, and that would be you know, at least a tip of the cap.
I'm reading Liz's Twitter, by the way, right now, because she's tweeting about the Golden Globes.
I do not have it on mute.
I just cannot get annoyed at Green Book winning because the HFPA is a group of star effers who love sentimental claptrap. This movie was made to win a Golden Globe and nothing else. I haven't seen Green Book, but I know the movie you're talking about, and I would tend to agree, Liz.
Yeah, don't see it. Don't see Green Book. Go see literally almost any other movie.
Let's finish up with another kind of off-topic thing. And, you know, we're seeing some teams this offseason that have kind of been in the shadows. And I guess you could say the Phillies are one of those teams, although the Phillies were competitive last year. But some of these, especially National League teams, who've kind of been off in the distance, in the corners, not been very good these last few years, trying to get involved. They're trying to mix it up. You know, you got the White Sox in the American League who are trying to mix it up and trying to run with the big boys this winter. And you got teams like the Reds and the Padres, and the Mariners are making moves all over the place, you know. And some of these teams, they haven't been good for a while, and you know, they're trying to get back into the mix. And so I guess what team that's been bad a lot recently are you kind of looking forward to seeing be good again? And I'll lead off because I've got a team that I really, really have enjoyed, and I always enjoy when they're in the postseason for whatever reason. And Liz, they're close to where you are, and that's the Cincinnati Reds. The Reds are like a classic baseball team. They've been around forever. I think they've actually been around longer than the Phillies, which is hard to believe. The Reds
have actually.
I think they go back to the 1870s.
Baseball team, the Red Stockings.
I thought that's what I didn't want to say that, but I think you're right. I think you're right. And they have been and also ran for years and years and years because they play in such a small market. But they've had big players there. Joey Votto has been there for a long time. They had a great offense last year. Remember the Phillies going into Cincinnati and just getting run over by that offense? It was unbelievable. And when the Reds are good, I just think it's kind of fun because they're such an old school team. They've got such a rich history. You got the big red machine from the 1970s. That 1990 Reds team that swept the Oakland A's in four games was unbelievably shocking. And I just like the Reds. I don't know what it is about the Reds. I've always liked the Cincinnati Reds. And so I'm kind of hopeful that, you know, as long as they're not getting in the Phillies' way, I'm kind of hopeful that they'll kind of get back into the mix and be a competitive team again here over the next few years. So, Liz, what about you? Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Justin. What are you going to say?
I was just going to say, really hoping Yasiel Puig is a set of defibrillators for that part of that fan base, because not calling out Reds fans or anything, but he tends to bring shock and awe wherever he goes. And I wish he was on the Phillies, and I love him. And it's going to be hilarious seeing him in another uniform in another part of the country and watch another group of people kind of like just get used to him.
And that's the kind of player that city and that franchise needed to kind of jumpstart some interest. You're right, to kind of make some headlines. And since Justin, you already dropped in there. Do you have a team?
Sorry,
I said I was starting to say Liz, but then, you know, it would be weird, synergistically, if I didn't let you go now. So go.
I mean, I wanted to say something about Puig because you didn't, and that's why I was going to pick the Reds. But since you did.
Oh, sorry, buddy.
But all three of us may have picked the Reds.
But since you did, I want to say the Mariners, and not because I have particular respect for their front office or anything, but because I see a lot of kindred spirits in wearing Mariners jerseys, frankly. And it's not that the Phillies and Mariners have a perfect parallel throughout their histories, but they're a team that obviously the Phillies don't play a whole lot, but they've had a lot of likable players, I believe, over the years. Having grown up in the era I grew up in, Ken Griffey Jr. was the best baseball player on the planet. Edgar Martinez was terrifying. I mean, the Jay Buhner, a couple of those guys from that era, like that was always like learning about those guys out west as an East Coast kid baseball fan growing up was always like, oh, what's going on out there? And just seeing the luck they've had, especially this past year when I did mention that they did kind of parallel the Phillies as far as coming on strong and then just burning out in a very sad, confusing way. And just because of social media and what we do as like baseball writers, I've come in contact with a lot more people who are Mariners fans and Mariners writers. And I mean, good Lord, like they could use a break because it's a very fun place. Like you're saying with the Reds, it's a very fun place when the team is giving fans what they want. And I just have an affinity for the Pacific Northwest, and just like I really want to see Seattle be good again, just because we're getting to a point where we're seeing a lot of the same teams again. You know, we had that blip on the radar when the Orioles and the Pirates and like the Rangers were all coming out as playoff teams, and they were teams like we weren't really hadn't seen be good in a long time. And unlike the bigger market teams, they don't really sustain that success for as long. You know, they kind of got to throw everything at it for like 3, maybe 4 years, and then they're the Orioles, and they're a 47 win team that's going to be rebuilding from scratch again. Meanwhile, the Yankees, hey, look, really missed seeing them in the playoffs. Going to get used to seeing them for the next 10, 12 years. Awesome. So I just feel like the Mariners are one of those teams, and they're a franchise I'd really like to see come back into the fray.
Liz, I hope I didn't steal yours, but were you going to say the Reds too?
I was, because I live about 45 minutes from Cincinnati. I really have enjoyed going to see the Reds. Great American Ballpark is really nice. it sounds terrible. It's spacious, kind of empty. You can get tickets for pretty cheap. Though I'll say people will come out for a Joey Votto thing. They had Joey Votto Funko Pops, and people were lined up like 6 hours before the game.
Yeah.
Like, no kidding. They were
it's
actually
a great
lined
baseball
up. Like,
town.
They really care about the Reds in that town. Like, the attendance is always more than I think it's going to be. Yasiel Puig is going to be, I think he's going to hate Cincinnati. It's not a bad town, but it's not a Yasiel Puig town, I don't think. Though, to be honest, any town he's in is a Yasiel Puig town. I think he's going to be an interesting addition to the team. That just desperately is just looking for anything. Like, I have such an affinity for small market teams. Like, I love the Brewers.
Me too.
The Brewers are a team that I love. Small market teams that, you know, really have to work hard. Like, that's why I loved it when the Twins are another one that
And
I
the
love.
Royals, when the Royals won the World Series and went to two in a row, that was cool.
Exactly. When they can not just have 1 year of success, but sustained success, I know it's proving something that, you know, I wish didn't have to, you know, like small market teams, you have to spend a lot of money to win, be cheap, and it gives the big teams an excuse to spend no money, blah, blah, et cetera. You know, we've talked about it 8 zillion times, but I'm allowed to take some joy in small market teams winning because I like it, because it is nice when, you know, the underdog wins, because small market teams are almost always the underdogs.
I was going to look this up for this episode, and I just ran out of time, and I don't know if it's anything anybody could know off the top of their heads, but when's the last, I mean, what do you think was the last, like, year where there were, when the league was at its most competitive, when there were, like, as few sub-50 win teams as possible, where it was, like, for a certain amount of time, really everybody was in it. You know what I mean? Like, when there wasn't such disparity between the good teams and the bad teams. And like, I can't think of a year like that off the top of my head.
I think like 2015 saw, that's when you started to see a lot of the small market teams like the Royals start to play well. I mean, I guess that was the year they went to the World Series against the Giants, but I think I remember them being a number of kind of small market teams that had managed to make the postseason. But you're right, it's, you know, the whatever the era was before teams decided to do the radical rebuild, really before it was necessary. I mean, teams have always have rebuilt for decades. I mean, we were talking about that when the Phillies started their rebuild. I mean, teams have been rebuilding in that way for a long time, but not as many at a time as we have seen in the past. So, question.
By the way, none of us said the Padres, and I don't have any particular affinity for the Padres, but I saw today, it's been, the Dodgers have won the West, the NL West, 6 years in a row. I think I'm ready to see another team kind of come out of that division. Not the Giants, yeah, but like another team.
Right, right. No, yeah, I like the Padres okay. Yeah, for whatever reason, I've never really connected with the Padres in any way, but
uniforms suck right now.
Well, if they bring back the brown and the gold and the yellow, then I'm all in, but they have the worst uniforms, and frankly I think the Brewers' new uniforms are equally as terrible as the Padres' uniforms. Both those squads should go back to the old school uniforms full time, because they're terrible.
Yes,
yeah, awful. All right, any final thoughts, guys, before we wrap up here?
Well, do you want to, sorry, this is off mic, do you want to do the Jared Eichhoff thing? I think that's worth at least mentioning if you guys feel like it.
Yeah. All right, we can knock that out, and then once we're done talking about Jared, I'll just wrap up rather than throw it to last thoughts, because I know you guys don't usually. I never know how to end it, so that's usually just how I do it.
You guys don't have thoughts. I get it.
Yeah, guys, just
I would have had to have talked about Lady Gaga being robbed of a Golden Globe.
Oh well, then I'm going to mention it. Then I'll ask for final thoughts because you can mention that. That'll be fun.
All right, I got to come up with one. I should have saved the Brian Schneider thing. Oh, I wasted
you
it.
You idiot. Oh man. All right, here we go. three, two, one. All right, well, one last thing, guys, before we wrap up. And Megan Montemuro had a really good piece in The Athletic on Jared Eichhoff. And I've gotten a lot of questions from people on Twitter asking about Jared Eichhoff in 2019. And I got to be honest, when I'm thinking about this team, I forget about Eichhoff. And, you know, he was one of those guys that was super valuable just a couple years ago. In 2015 and 16, he had a 3.44 ERA for those two seasons, had a 120 ERA plus, a whip of 1.136. He was a really good middle-of-the-rotation starter. And then he started having those issues with carpal tunnel and numbness in his hands. And in the piece that Montemuro wrote last week, she mentioned that he went to go see, had a procedure done, and they found that there was a tendon in his arm that was putting additional pressure on a nerve there that was making the carpal tunnel symptoms worse. And that if he hadn't had that surgery, if he had taken a less invasive approach to getting himself treated, he would have continued to have the numbness in 2019. But now he said he's 100% healthy. He's not feeling the numbness at all. He's throwing he threw a bullpen session on Monday. He says he's 100% healthy, that he's going to be ready to go for spring training with absolutely no limitations whatsoever. And even last year, when he pitched in that one game in September, he had a super high spin rate on his curveball, which generates usually more ground balls and more vertical movement top to bottom. He had like eight strikeouts, and I think it was five innings against the Braves with seven of them with the curveball. It would be a huge step forward maybe they don't need to go out and get a Dallas Keuchel if they feel reasonably sure that Jared Eichhoff is going to be there for them. So, Justin, what are your thoughts on Dallas Keuchel in 2019 actually providing some kind of usefulness to this team?
I mean, I certainly think he could. I believe we've talked about him when it was sort of like by default the Phillies fell into Dallas Keuchel rumors because the other starters they were interested in signed elsewhere. I'm just way more interested in Eichhoff. Not because I think he could necessarily do a better job, but it's more just like those are the guys you kind of rely on when you're the Phillies in this position to like, oh, this comeback story really paid off for the Phillies. Like that's one of the luck that you kind of have to have go your way when it comes to putting together a team that's like rebuilding right now. And Eichhoff is a guy that I forgot about too. So I would rather see that role filled by an Eichhoff more so than a Keuchel. So it wasn't like the Phillies are just filling every hole they have with a free agent just because they can afford to, but they also are able to, continue to develop players after they suffered devastating injuries. I mean, this would be Eichhoff's fifth year in the league. Can you believe that? That really, when I was looking that up today, I was like, that's unbelievable that he's been in Major League Baseball that long. I keep thinking this is his second year for the past 5 years, obviously. But like you got to be able to trust him like that. Okay, if we're going to really trust that Eichhoff, who's been a fraction of a pitcher, if that, for the past 2 years, I mean, you can't really trust him to take a rotation spot. You want to trust the guy who had the like sexy curveball, the guy who had like a sub 3 ERA in June of 2016, the season where everyone was like, this could be a guy who actually is a guy, the guy who like in April threw 7 innings and 9 strikeouts against the Padres. Like you want that guy. You want to be able to trust that guy. You want to be able to think that whatever the Phillies are doing to fix him, that's who he's going to be. That's the version of him that he could actually still be. But I mean, I don't know. Is that guy still in there? That's the part that sucks. He's 28 years old now. And he's been going through a lot of pain and an injury that, you know, I was trying to figure out who else has gone through the kind of issues he's faced. And it's not a lot. You see that exact tendon kind of brought up as far as baseball. The one thing I found was Matt Wieters, when he had Tommy John surgery, had it replaced. So I'm assuming that's probably, or it was used to replace his other tendon in the way that they like move your arm parts around when in Tommy John surgery.
Okay.
But I want Jared Eichhoff to come out and be Jared Eichhoff again. And I would like to think that that's possible, because in baseball, like, we see comebacks all the time. But as far as like trusting him to take a rotation spot away from like a guy like Dallas Keuchel, to the point that you think, oh, well, we just don't have to get Dallas Keuchel. It's just hard to believe, but I guess the Phillies have to be willing to take a chance on guys like this from time to time. So I guess we'll see.
Liz, what do you think the odds are that Jared Eichhoff pitches meaningful games for the Phillies as a starter this year?
I think the chances are pretty good. He's been through a lot, yes, but I think that kind of makes a guy like him, who's seen, you know, Aaron Nola blossom, who has, you know, seen Jake Arrieta get a big contract. And I think, you know, I don't think it would take that much for Jared Eichhoff to match what Jake Arrieta did overall. Because Jake Arrieta wasn't all that great. If he can get there, that's incredible. I think he has the I am 100% healthy proclamations are not just true, but also based on a desire to kind of prove himself, to prove I can be part of this team.
Yeah.
I can be part of this team. I can contribute to this team. I want to be part of making this team better. And if he can be, that's a huge help. Oh, it's such a huge help. And I want to see him do well, because I've loved him ever since he came over. And I just would very much like to see him sort of make good on the promise that he showed at one point.
Nickname for him was the human metronome, because he was so unbelievably consistent and good. And, you know, the injuries can kill a pitcher, but if he's healthy, it could be a big addition to the rotation. But I agree with you guys. If you have the opportunity to sign Dallas Keuchel to a reasonable deal here, I think you do that, and then you figure out if Jared Eichhoff can be a useful piece for you in some other way, or is just injury backup. You know, start him in AAA, and he's an extra arm at AAA you can bring up if you need to. But it's a great story, and I would love to see it pay off for Eichhoff, who has really gone through the ringer in 2017 and 2018. It'd be nice if he can make a real contribution coming up next season. All right, guys, time to wrap up the podcast. Any final thoughts? Liz, we'll go to you first.
I have a Golden Globes update. Lady Gaga has been robbed. She has been robbed of her Golden Globe for A Star Is Born. The best and quite possibly one of the only movies
they
I
knocked
saw
her down and took it, is what you're saying? Somebody ran up there and
yes. No, Glenn Close won, because there's nothing that the Hollywood Foreign Press Association loves more than honoring stars that they've honored before. Honoring established movie stars is something that they love. Michael Douglas won a Golden Globe for a television project
really?
That
for
I had
that?
Never heard
that was,
of.
That looked like another. Oh, that sucks.
Was that the Netflix movie with Adam Arkin? No, not Adam Arkin. Who? Yeah, was that right? Yeah, yeah.
Yep, that I think that also won its category. I also think that also won its category because I saw Adam Arkin and like a bunch of white dudes walking up on stage. Yep, really weird Golden Globes night, kids. If you if you like me do a pool with your friends and family, most likely you've lost.
Golden Globes rules for the record.
Oh God, I love Glenn Close. She's an amazing angel, and from what I could tell on the television, muted, that I'm totally not watching, she was crying during her speech and felt very good about getting an award as an older Hollywood actress, which I support, but still Gaga forever.
Well, Justin, how about you? Any final thoughts?
I'll circle back to having just seen Vice, and I gotta say, I you know, just barring a whole political debate here, I did have a thought during the movie that it's a real shame that George W. Bush was president and not like the highest he got wasn't just commissioner of baseball, because, and I don't mean to do this, you know, retrofitting isn't George W. Bush a cute little baby thing that, you know, is very popular. I'm not doing that when I say this. I'm just saying, would he not have been a spectacular commissioner of baseball? Guy who gets blamed for everything, but just has to sit there and eat ribs and then like talk to be on a baseball broadcast every now and again. People would like the same way that people were like, oh, I don't think he's a good president, but I would have a beer with him. You know, you can say that, but just not without the president part, which would be so much better and healthier. You know, all the worst he could do is like screw up America's pastime and not America. I think that would have been a perfect job for him.
I don't disagree that George W. Bush would have made a very good baseball commissioner. Yeah, for sure. Because you're right. He's got some skills, the people skills and a lot of the interpersonal skills. But his tenure as president definitely he was not a popular guy by the end of it, for sure. And so there was a reason for that.
They just revisit, they revisit the idea that that's pretty much all he wanted. And, and you're like, yeah, that's all we wanted too, buddy.
Oh, man. All right, well, listen, folks, that'll do it for episode number 246 of Hittin' Season. My thanks to Justin Clue and Liz Rocher for coming back on the Sunday Night Podcast once again. And, folks, remember to please leave a rating and a review at Apple Podcasts for the Good Fights podcast feed and for continued success, The Dirty Inning and Hittin' Season. Don't forget to follow Justin on Twitter at Justin_Clue, Liz Rocher at Liz Rocher, and me at John Stolness. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to y'all next time right here on Hittin' Season.
I'm Michael Kist of Bleeding Green Nation, and I invite you, gentle listener, to join us for the best analysis of the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles in the business. BGN Radio provides you with the most informative preview shows, and the Kist and Solak show dives deep into all the scheme and X&O details you could ever want. Plus discussions with the industry's brightest minds, including former NFL players, and press conferences from the Eagles coaching staff to keep you up to date and informed every step of the way. Subscribe to Bleeding Green Nation today. Fly, Eagles, fly.